Okay, Ellie, great to see you. Let me just start with a few words of Chazara, which will be important in terms of what we're going to talk about today, as people join in. So last week, I think any fair-minded person would say that based on Shlomo's words at the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash, is that his primary conception was that this is a Beis Tefillah. I don't see any way around that. And the fact is that Shlomo relates, as we noted, to the idea of davening in the Beis HaMikdash, facing the Beis HaMikdash, so that you're never sort of beyond, one's connection to that space. I would say that's the second point. The third point is, like we pointed out at the beginning, the special din of Tefillah Be'ez Tzara, crisis prayer. So that is really captured by Shlomo. Right, the idea of Dever Kiya, Rav Kiya, Milchama, Oyev, all of that, I think, is very well represented. And so that really does capture, even within the halachic framework of tefillah, Shlomo seems to be hitting on that note as well. And then fourth and finally, this has many implications, but the idea that this is what Yeshayahu would later call, ki beisi beis tefillah yikarei l'chol ha'amim, but the notion that Shlomo has is that the broader scope allows for the greater Kiddush Hashem, and all the other nations will acknowledge that this place is literally the world center. It sounds a little bombastic, but it's justified in this case. But the world center for connection with God. That becomes very important also. And everything else is really, secondary. So, of course, the image that we'll have today to finish things off of Shlomo offering, many, many, many korbanos, I don't mean to, downplay that point, but I think we do have to confront it as Shlomo understood it. And Shlomo understood it as a base tefillah, which is, again, really fascinating. And I think it is a point. So I'm just trying to get in. Apologize. One second. I think it's a point of some correction because, again, I think there is a lot of misunderstanding about the role of Neshama Parim Sfaseinu. It's true, in the absence of Korbanos, Tefillah became that much more significant because yet another portal of connection was closed off. But the idea that, Korbanos were primary relative to tefillah, I think, is largely unsubstantiated. And I think you get, Shlomo putting up the Beis HaMikdash is a really important piece of that puzzle. So again, I think the critical emphasis has to be on the Beis HaMikdash as primarily a Beis Tefillah, which isn't to say there aren't other important things going on there. And the Korbanos Bayis Muchan Lahakribo Korbanos, as the Rambam wrote, the fact that the Sanhedrin is there, Misham Tetzeh Horeh LiYisrael, these are all really important functions, but the Beis HaMikdash primarily as a Beis Tefillah, I think, is the impression that we should walk away with. Okay, so that's what we discussed last week. What I want to discuss this week is kind of Shlomo's message for the people, right? In contrast to his message or his petition to Hashem. So the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash concludes with Shlomo turning to the people. I think I mentioned last week, and it's worth reiterating, that this would be the final time that Shlomo addresses the Jewish people. And so even though, of course, it's only meant to be a farewell message in the sense of sort of farewell from this inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash, it also has this additional dimension, as we know as the readers, that Shlomo would never again be face-to-face with his people. What's referred to here consistently, we'll see both the Psukim in Malachim as well as Divrei Hayamim, but the Kahal Gadol is a very signature expression, I would say. So this is now Shlomo's opportunity to sort of impart, a really critical message. And what I'd like to try to do, with your permission, is to tie it back into an observation that the Ramban makes at the end of Bechukosa that some of us discussed on Shabbos, but I think a lot of that comes through. So I'm going to try right now. Okay, hopefully this will work. To share my screen. I know that Google Docs just underwent some kind of a technical, they made some changes. People were telling me that the share screen wasn't working as well. So, okay. Is this, functional for people? Not so functional? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great. So Vayikha Chalot, and if something starts, so people said to me last time I did this that something started beeping, I couldn't see it. So, you know, just like, you know, send up a flare, a smoke grenade, something that will let me know that, you know, that something is awry. So Vayikha Chalot Shlomo Yispalel al Hashem Kol HaTfila VeHatzchina. Like last week we spoke enough about that point, the dual nature of the tefillah, tzchina being more, you know, mimamakim. So the choreography here is very interesting. Shlomo gets up off of his knees, right? He's reaching for the heavens. This very evocative image of Shlomo, you know, stretching forth from the earth to the heavens. Sula mutzavarza v'rosho magia shamaya. The idea of really trying to connect, bridge the unbridgeable. Vayamod vayivarechas kol kahal Yisrael kol gadol lemor. So again, the Matan Torah imagery here, apropos Shavuos, is undeniable. The Kol Gadol v'lo Yasaf, right? The Kahal Yisrael, B'yom HaKahal, that's how we refer to, you know, Maimid Har Sinai. Baruch Adonai Asher Nasan Menucha L'Amu Yisrael, K'chol Asher Diber, L'Nof Al Davar Echad, Mikol Dvaro HaTov, Asher Diber B'yad Moshe Avdel. And this is yet another piece of evidence, right, that what we're seeing is the idea that it's, you know, connecting back to the days of Moshe. So the point being that Shlomo understands this moment, and he's communicating that this moment to the Jewish people is a moment of being able to reconnect with sort of something that Moshe had started. Eva, wonderful to see you. So that is going to be a very important, you know, motif that we'll develop tonight, that the building of the Beis HaMikdash was Shlomo not just finishing the work of David HaMelech, which is definitely true, but a well-developed point. I think equally important, maybe, but just a little bit more subtly, is the idea that Shlomo is now completing the work that Moshe Rabbeinu had set out. If you recall, at the very beginning of this entire six-part series, we talked about how the building the Beis HaMikdash is 480 years from the moment that the Jewish people left Egypt. Right, that's how the Navi introduces it. It's unmistakable that this is the natural conclusion of Maimed Har Sinai. So, Lahatos l'Bavenu Elav, L'Lechas b'chol drachav, L'shmor mitzvosav v'chukav, Mishpatav asher tziva es avosenu. So quite literally, what's going on here is a Kabbalah Satorah. Shlomo is gathering the people, the Kahal Gadol, with the Kol Gadol, all of the same formulations that we find by Revelation at Sinai, Maimed Har Sinai, and they're recommitting to the Torah. V'yu devarai eila asher yischananti lefanecha Adonai krovim al Adonai Eloheinu yomam b'layla la'asos mishpat avdo mishpat amo Yisrael devar yom b'yomo. So now Shlomo, again, elements of petition here, says that God should make himself available to care for not only his servant, meaning me, Shlomo, but also the entire Jewish people. Devar yom b'yomo, the Mitzvah Tavit has a beautiful formulation, davar hanitzrach b'chol yom, whatever it is that the people need on that occasion. L'man das kol amei haaretz ki Hashem hu Elokim in od. But this won't only have implications for the Jewish people, but this will have international or cosmic implications, namely that everybody will recognize, by virtue of divine interaction with the Jewish people, everybody will be able to acknowledge God's presence and involvement in the world. V'ayal levavchem shalem yom Adonai Eloheinu lelechas b'chukav lishmor mitzvosav ki yom hazeh. Okay, so it is important. Here we have the reemergence of Korbanos, but I would just again add that Shlomo is emphasizing that is to say, the moment of inauguration of the Mikdash was a reacceptance of the Torah. Okay, so now we have the massive number of Korbanos, Vayizbach, Shlomo, Ezevach Hashlemim Asher Zevach Adonai Bakar Esrim Bushnaim Elef, 22,000. Vitzon Meo Veshim Elef, literally 120,000 sheep, which is almost an inconceivable, right, amount, hard to fathom. Veyachanchu Es Beis Adonai Amelech V'chol B'nei Yisrael. Okay. So because the Korbanos were so numerous, this is discussed at length in the Gemara's Vachem. There's a dispute there between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, but we more or less, except the view of Rabbi Yehuda, that what happened was is that the Mizbeach, like sometimes they say about shul construction, it was too small the minute it was built. All right, that's not a new story. It goes back to the base of Mikdash itself. We want to be consistent in the Mikdash Mat. So at that time, with the new Mizbeach, the new and improved, expanded Mizbeach, you know, wasn't big enough. Bayomahu kidash hamelech has tochech chatzera shulifnei beis Adonai, ki asa sham esa ula, vesa mincha, veschel vehashlamim, ki mizbeach hanachoshes asher lifnei Adonai, katon meachil esa ula, es hamincha, ve'es chelvei hashlamim. Okay, so it was just insufficient, so Shlomo literally had to consecrate other areas of the Azara, of the courtyard, for purposes of Kedushas Mizbeach, so that he could offer korbanos there. Again, this isn't like, you know, a knock on the thing, like it was too small. The point is that, you know, the multitude of korbanos that Shlomo offered, nobody's compelling him to do this, but this is just, you know, a little bit of what we've spoken about so often, about Shlomo's sense of scale. You know, he's bigger is always better from his point of view. I just want to again draw your attention to that kahal gadol. That's the expression that we find much the language of Matan Torah. Milavo chamas anachal mitzrayim lifnei Adonai Eloheinu shivas yamim v'shivas yamim arba asar yom. So the whole thing was 14 days. There was 7 days of inaugurating the Beis Hamikdash. And then 7 days, starting with the 15th of Tishrei, of celebrating Chag HaSukkos. And Bayom Hashmini, Shilach Es Ha'am, Vayivarchu Es HaMelech, Vayilchu Le'olehem. So they go back to their tents after blessing the king. There's a famous Gemara that says that Shmini Regel Bifnei Atzmo, the Inyan Pazar Kashav, for 6 halachos, the bet in Kashav is a reference to Bracha. Most Rishonim understand it in light of this pasuk that the people gave Shlomo HaMelech this bracha on Shmini Atzeres, and they went back to their tents. So that's an interesting formulation in its own right, because we find that, again, apropos our premise, right after Matan Torah, right? Shuvu lachem le'aleichem. Go back to your tents, go back to your families. Moshe could not resume family life. Yatapo amodi mati. So I don't think there's any two ways about it. I mean, this entire section is clearly a new Kabbalah Torah, a new acceptance of the Torah, part of what I had in mind. You know, when we talked about doing this before Shavuos, Smeichim v'tove lev, and they went back in a state of Simcha and Tuv Levav, obviously a very important expression, Al Kol HaTovah Asher Asad L'Nai L'David Avdo, Li Yisrael Amos. They were all rejoicing about this. Couple points. Number one, so if the whole motif here is that building the Beis HaMikdash was really a kind of a reacceptance of the Torah, where there's no doubt that's what Shlomo is talking about here, it's to that end that he's imploring the people, so then we can well understand why the perception and the reality, to a great extent, of this event is a continuation of the work of Moshe. Right? Mamad Har Sinai should have naturally led to entering the land of Israel and the construction of the Mikdash. Now, a lot got in the way. We know, starting with the Chet HaEgel, the spies, and, you know, a million other detours. So it took 480 years, but this is the moment when Jewish history gets back on track. So that shouldn't surprise us. The language really picking up where the language of Matan Torah, of Revelation itself, left off. I would add, apropos something that many of us were discussing over Shabbos, is that's really the Ramban's theory of Jewish history, where the Ramban says, yeah, this was there aren't really, for the Ramban, two Batei Mikdash, there aren't two temples. The second base of Mikdash is, you know, some kind of a dilute, very dilute place, or God didn't even make his presence felt. If you take a look in the Gemara in Yoma and of Chaf Aleph, the Gemara there says explicitly that there are 5 distinctions between the first and second Beis HaMikdash, including but not limited to the fact that there was no Ruach HaKodesh, there was no prophetic vision, there was no Shechina, there was no divine presence, there was no Eish, there was no divine fire that came from on high, there was no Urim V'tumim, there was no way to sort of communicate with God through the person of the Kohen Gadol, and there wasn't an Aron Kaporis or Kruvim. So the point is, so the Ramban demonstrates that this was it. This was the moment when Jewish history reached its apex. And I think that really conforms to this idea that the Navi is emphasizing that the Jewish people at that time were in a state of simcha v'tov lev. And that, of course, is a reference to what the Torah says in Sefer Dvarim in Parshas Kisavo, that destruction comes tachas asher lo avatas Hashem Elokecha b'simcha v'tov levav mirov kol. Because you fail to serve God in a state of joy and gladness of one's heart, and from a position of abundance, which is to say, is that what the Jewish people are doing right here is the definition, from the Torah standpoint, of the optimal form of divine service. It's like a beatitude. And Shlomo is able to organize that and make sure that that's, you know, achieved. And it's a great moment, and like I say, it's a historic moment, and it's the completion of the work of Moshe. Right? Yehoshua completed one aspect of Moshe's work by bringing the Jewish people into the land of Israel, by conquering it and by settling it, and dividing it into its tribal portions. But right, this is the mitzvah that should have followed. The Ramban writes in his introductory essay to Sefer Bamidbar, in his introductory essay to Sefer Vayikra, countless times throughout both of those Sfarim, that the Mishkan is a natural continuation of Sinai, the divine presence that rested on Sinai. As soon as the shofar sounded, Mishol Chayovel, Hema Yalu Vahar, it then transferred over the Mishkan, supposed to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Again, a 480-year detour, right, half a millennium, but this is Jewish history getting back, you know, on track. And that is, you know, I think very, very significant. Now, what I want to direct your attention to is the following conundrum. So if we do the math and we say, okay, so Shlomo had a seven-day celebration for the Beis HaMikdash, and then he had a seven-day celebration of Chag HaSukkos. And by the way, the Gemara in Moed Katan says this is the source of the principle that we don't sort of conflate joyous occasions, so the din of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. We don't have a right to do that. So the Beis HaMikdash gets its 7 days, and the holiday Chag HaSukkos gets its own integrity, its own 7 days. Fine. So if you do the math, so what emerges? That during the 7 days of celebration of the inauguration of Beis HaMikdash, days of festivity, festival. So what holiday must have occurred during those days? If it went roughly from the 8th to the 15th, or the 7th to the 14th, right?
Sukkos.
Right, well, Sukkos is the back.
Yeah. Yom Kippur.
Right. So I have to tell you, a goodly number of the Rishonim and Achronim are in denial. Like, don't know what to do with this. But the Gemara says in two places, in Moed Katan and in Shabbos, that they didn't observe Yom Kippur that year. So here I am, I just finished, you know, 18 minutes of explaining that, and 20 seconds, that this was some kind of a spiritual beatitude, you know, besimcha v'tuv levav, and, you know, all of Klal Yisrael was mechal Yom Kippur.
they observed Sukkos.
It says they observed Sukkos, you know, so, but again.
No, I'm talking about the carbonates. Specific carbonates for Sukkos.
Sounds like
they're included.
Yeah, I guess, it sounds like a lot of animals, you know. So
I think there was enough time.
But maybe. Well, by that point, they were done offering the 120,000. But so Effie, just think about this for a second, right? Where's the Inoy? Where's the fasting of Yom Kippur? So it's very, you know, the Gemara in both Moed Katan and in Shabbos says, oh, you know, this is what it means when it says Vayochol Olehem Smeichem V'Tovei Leiv Al Kol HaTova Asher Asa Shem David Avdo Well, the Yisrael Amo, that Hashem was Mochel the Chait of Yom Kippur, that He forgive the sin of Yom Kippur. Again, a lot of the Rishonim Achronim tonight, they say, oh well, you know, they didn't eat, they sort of celebrated, they offered korbanos, but no, it doesn't sound that way. Right? It's an amazing omission in the Psukim if they really kept Yom Kippur, right? You know, it's not like the Navi is shy about, you know, expressing the idea that they celebrated, you know, Chag HaSukkos. So if I were to say to you that this was ironic, I think you would rightfully, you know, say back to me, This isn't ironic. This is like indefensible. You're telling me that the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash, which certainly reaches its greatest heights on Yom Kippur, right? That's the day that the Kohen Gadol goes, the innermost sanctum, lifnai v'liftim, the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash itself caused the Jewish people in our entirety to abrogate Yom Kippur, and that this was somehow some great event? It's just totally bizarre. So there's one thing, okay, Hashem says, I'll let it slide, you know, which is very generous. But it wasn't like it was some accident, right? They were building this for 7.5 years. They could have scheduled, they could have said, you know, after Yontif, you know, we'll do the inauguration. I mean, if Israeli universities could delay the start of their semester till after Yontif, so I think there's at least, you know, Gzeirah Shava, if not a Kal V'chomer, to be made. You know, no offense to the Israeli universities, but, you know, it's a strange thing. And you can hardly blame, you know, the Malbim and the Radak and to some extent the Abravanel, amongst others, you know, being in denial, saying, no, you know, they had to have kept Yom Kippur. All right, so maybe they were allowed to offer these korbanos. That was a kind of an exigency, a Horal Shah, but, you know, but they violated Yom Kippur. This is like, you know, shocking. But that's really what it says. Right? That starting on the 7th, I suppose, of Tishrei, they observe 7 whole days of festivities, followed by another 7 days of, you know, Sukkot. And you know, God forbid we should compromise on Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. You know, that's inviolate. So we'll just have to violate Yom Kippur. We can't just, like, double up and celebrate Sukkot and the Beis HaMikdash at the same time. You know, that's not possible. So I guess Yom Kippur is just going to have to go. What does this mean? Like, you know, if you said, came to a rabbi and said, like, you know, what's more important? That we should keep Yom Kippur or make sure not to, you know, mix the joys together? Yeah. I don't want to speak for anybody, but if they came to me, I would say, well, you know, Yom Kippur, that's like pretty fundamental. Kares, both for Malacha and for Inui.
I have a question. When we say that the greatest joy that we have all year long is Yom Kippur, is that joy considered Simcha or is that another word?
It's interesting. The language of the Gemara is, you know, Yitzchak, you'll like this apropos the Psukim. Lo hayu yamim tovim usmeicham the Yisrael, ela, you know, ki Yom Kippur ve tu ba'av. So it gets simcha and, you know, tovim also. Interesting. All right. Any theories? I mean, this is like one of the most bizarre. I remember, like, you know, thinking that there was some mistake when I, the way that, like, I think most people who go through the system here. So you do Yoshua in 4th grade, and Shoftim in 5th grade, Shmuel Aleph, you know, we in 6th grade. In 7th grade, you do Shmuel Bet. In 8th grade, you're supposed to do Malachim Aleph, but the schools are trying to inflate their BJE scores, so they just do review. But, you know, we still learned a little bit of Sefer Malachim. That I remember, and I was sitting there in 8th grade, you know, I'm reading this, you know, and, you know, say it's like 1 year I'm paying attention to the BJE review also, you know, I didn't want to disgrace the school, but I remember reading this and thinking to myself, there has to be some mistake. Like, what do you mean that they did this on Yom Kippur? This is ridiculous. You know, it really stood out to me. You know, and, you know, I didn't do it at the time, but then later on, you know, you go and you cross-check in Divrei Yamim and, you know, Divrei Yamim Beis and Perek Zayin. It says the same thing there. So,
but nothing says that they didn't observe Yom Kippur.
Yeah, so that's okay. What the Radak and the Malbim and the Ravenel doesn't really stick with it. But, you know, they say, yeah, so of course it says that they were Smeichim, like Yitzchak is suggesting, and there was, you know, Tov Levav, but, you know, for sure they had to have fasted on Yom Kippur, you know. Okay, so they offered korbanos, but probably they were all, you know, it gets very elaborate, the theory. They say, oh, they were all korbanolas that day, because, you know, who could eat the shlamim? And, you know, so they, you know, it gets pretty, like I say, pretty elaborate. But it doesn't sound that way. And actually, it's kind of weird, right? Like, if it's really true that they observed Yom Kippur, so then it should say, like, okay, so they made the seven-day festival, and one of the days was Yom Kippur, and, you know, V'chol ha'am his'anu, you know, L'chaper alavonam, and then, you know, they went back to the party, you know. Nothing. Sukkot gets all, you know, the acclaim. So it's a very, very bizarre thing. So I think that there are basically two approaches, unless somebody wants to make a suggestion. Happy to take suggestions. It's very confounding. And like I say, you know, the conventional wisdom is either you go with Chazal and you say, you know, this was the Hora Shah, it, you know, it was just an expression of divine will, no explanation possible, no explanation required, but no explanation possible. Or you say, you know, it can't really mean what it says it means. You know, sort of the you know, what I call denial, you know, somewhat facetiously, but really, you know, to rebel against the simple meaning of the text. So I think that there are two things. So one of them, I think... Oh, Eva, please.
Did they say specifically how they picked the date in the first place? Or was that just Shlomo's, I think, not strike that day?
It's such a great point. It was his... And that's what I was kidding around before. Like, you know, the Israeli universities that, you know, say, okay, we'll start after Yontif. We don't want to miss every second class. You know, it's a... You know, even without 2 days of Yantiv, it gets to be a problem. You know, so like, you know, he set this up deliberately. It's so weird. And you'd figure after 7.5 years of building that you would say, all right, you know, what's another month, right? Okay, so...
But he was also busy with the South.
Right. Right. So I think that there are a couple of different ways of looking at this. So let me start with... I think a more conservative approach, and then let me try to get a little bit more ambitious. But I'd like to hold the first approach at least as a fallback position. So I think the more conservative approach is to say, look, Yom Kippur in its essence is a day of Lifnei Hashem, of being in God's presence. Right, that's the idea. Lifnei Hashem titaru. Ashreicham Yisrael lifnei mi'atem etarin. That's the essential point of the day. Achas b'ashana, it's the unique day, it's a singular day. It's a day when a person is able to be in God's presence, you know, all day long. Normally, that requires, you know, as the Rambam puts it so inimitably, for us to have Shabbos Shabbason, not just Shvisa from Malacha, as we do every week, but we have to cease and desist, you know, from normal human activities. It's really interesting, you know, the way the Rambam frames it. It's much less about Inui, to be honest, about affliction, than it is about sort of transcendence, transcending the physical space. You know, if you think about it, it's this really interesting Mamar Chazal, which I don't think any of us can fully understand, but it says that in the next world, in Olam Haba, there are not the following activities. Velo achila, velo shesia, velo sicha, velo tash mishamita, velo ni'ila sasandol, elo tzadikim yoshin, atrosen beroshen, nanim biziv ashchina. So there's no eating, there's no drinking, there's no normal family life, there's nobody wearing shoes, right? It's rather the righteous people are, you know, sort of enjoying the bliss of being in divine proximity. So how is Olam Haba described? Literally in terms of the activities from which we, again, you could talk about them in terms of affliction, but you might say that we sort of try to transcend the human realm on Yom Kippur. So it's literally the same list of activities. It's striking. So if that's true, again, that's what's normally required for us limited human beings to achieve a status of Lifnei Hashem. So might we suggest that Yom Kippur on that year was observed, but very differently? Because the intensive reality of being Lifnei Hashem, where God is present, is uniquely present in that space, intensively present, So the Shvisos of Shvisas Asor, the fact that we normally have to cease and desist from these activities, Malachos, normal human activities, eating, drinking, etc., it wasn't necessary. Because the Tilos, that sense of being Lifnei Hashem, of being in God's presence, so that was achieved altogether. So that would be like, you know, the super Hutra approach. Right? That basically, there's no need to observe, if you will, the Inuyim or the Shvisos, because you can achieve the same goal simply by being there as God brings his presence into the Jewish people. So I'd like to establish that as a first approach and maybe hold that as my fallback position if the second approach is a little bit too speculative. You know, I sort of wrestled with this back and forth all week. But I wanted to share it in case anybody feels that it has some merit. And, you know, if it doesn't, you know, we won't quite strike it from the record, but we'll note that I hedged my position. So I spent a lot of time focusing on the fact that this chapter seems to be when Shlomo not just completed his father's vision, but in a material way, the work of Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, Moshe's career and his life gets derailed by the Chet HaEgel, the Miraklim, the spies. It takes a long time, you know, half a millennium, to get back to where things, you know, meant, you know, were meant to be headed. The Rav used to like to say, you know, had the Chet HaEgel derailed Jewish history, had Moshe been the one to bring the Jewish people into the land of Israel, then, you know, all of Jewish history would have been different. The Beis HaMikdash would have been built. It never would have been destroyed. Okay, fine. So if there's some merit in that, then I think the following might emerge. You know, Yom Kippur, to a great extent, as we know, is about expiation. Yitzchak, just to go back to the Gemara that you referenced before, right, the idea that the Gemara has that Yom Kippur is the most awesome of all our Yamim Tovim, in the literal sense of the term, and the most joyous, has to do, as the Gemara says, well, that's obvious because it's, you know, Yom Shenisnu Bo Luchos Hashnios. It's the day when we were given the Torah anew, right? As we saw here, the themes of Kabbalah's Torah, right? Ketz Mechilo Uslicha LiYisrael. The moment of, you know, when God forgave the Jewish people for the sin of the Egel Azav. The Rambam actually picks up on that expression. The Rambam has an interesting idea where he says that on Yom Kippur, Chayavin HaKol HaHisvados, Yachid V'Rabim. There's a personal obligation, a communal obligation to do Vidui on Yom Kippur because it's Ketz Mechilos Lichol Yisrael. So it's sort of like the identity of the day. Okay, so if that is so, if so much of the charisma or the ofi, the nature of Yom Kippur, is rooted in, you know, the sin of the Egel, the need for expiation, is it possible to say that now, again, after a very, very intensive process, 480-year process, so maybe for the first time, the Jewish people are now back where they were, right? When the Jewish people sinned at the Egel Azav, so it was a cataclysm. God says, you know, okay, you know, I'm not going to destroy you all right now, but uviyom pakti ufakati aleichem chataschem, you know, it's too much to punish you all right now, but over time. And now this is the moment when we're able to kind of, you know, reconnect to that space, to almost a pre-Chet HaEgel reality. So if that's true, then maybe from a very different point of view, Yom Kippur as a day of expiation becomes less necessary. Because we've achieved kapara, we've achieved forgiveness. We're now exactly where we should have been 480 years before. You go from Matan Torah, you're supposed to march into the land of Israel, Vayhi Vishurun Melech, Moshe Rabbeinu is the king, he puts up the Beis HaMikdash, It's all good. In that framework, is there, you know, a need for Yom Kippur as a day of expiation, or could we just, you know, sort of celebrate it as a day of, you know, celebration of being in God's presence? So I think that these are two ways of addressing this conundrum. Again, either what I call like the super hutra approach, where we focus, as the Rambam did, on Yom Kippur as a day of transcendence, of being in God's presence, and that you could get to via alternative mechanisms, and then suspending one's engagements with the world, which is normally what we require. Or, I think slightly more ambitiously, to make the claim that this was such a redemptive moment in Jewish history, we finally had the impact of the Chet HaEgel reversed. Now we're there, right? We have the Beis HaMikdash. We're serving God with Simcha, V'tuv Levav, Meirov Kol, right? All the language of this chapter supports the idea that it was a second Matan Torah, if you will. The Kahal Gadol with the Kol Gadol and all of that. So maybe Yom Kippur, so to speak, loses some of its significance as a day of expiation within that framework, because it's almost as if we finally, you know, been able to extract ourselves from the post-Egel reality. So either way, yeah, Ellie, go ahead.
Both your approaches, though, do they prove too much? So, to a certain extent, in other words, according to both of your approaches, wouldn't one maybe then say, once you have the Beis HaMikdash, not just the first year, but you're Lifnei Hashem all the time, you have your kapara for the ego forever after, at least while the Beis HaMikdash is still there. So would it then be on the future? I mean, you're not suggesting that after the Chanukah Sabayis the following year, they then return to observing Yom Kippur in the normal way, are you?
Right, okay, so it's a great question. I thought a lot about that issue, and it gives me, I would say, greater reservation with respect to the second approach than the first approach. Meaning, you know, thinking a lot about that, and I want to still hold it as an open as a possibility, but I would agree that in principle, one would then say that as long as the Beis HaMikdash is standing, so then if the claim really is that we reverse the pathologies of Chet HaEgel, so Yom Kippur as a day of Inui is not necessary. I'm not suggesting that I've totally given, you know, up on that approach in light of this very important question, because what happens in the Navi, at least, is that the downhill trajectory begins right away. In other words, it becomes kind of just like a building instead of a Lifnei Hashem experience. The first approach, I think, is better able. The question is still a very important question, but I think the first approach is better able to sustain the pressure of the challenge, because even though, yeah, for sure, Yom Kippur is always an opportunity to be Lifnei Hashem, I don't think it's you know, in any way a diminution of the succeeding Yimei Kippurim to suggest that that experience of seeing, you know, Vayar Kolam, Vayaronu, Vayiplu Al Pnei Hayam, seeing the Kavod Hashem enter the Beis HaMikdash was, you know, sort of like uniquely transcendent, you know, vis-a-vis subsequent years. So I think the first approach weathers the storm a little bit better than the second approach, but I don't want to give up on the second approach entirely, because, you know, if we'll say this was like, you know, an island in time, like it's like a beatitude, and then the moment they went home, not altogether unlike the first Matan Torah, right? The things start to, you know, really, which is definitely the impression that you have when you start reading the next, you know, few sections of Sefer Melachim until the wheels really come off. Then, yeah, I think it's still possible, harder, more tenuous, but possible to argue that this was like an island in time, you know, and there was never another year like it. By the next year already, the Jewish people had lost so much of, you know, we were back into what you might call a Chet HaEgel, like, you know, reality where, so it's an excellent question, and I think it may favor one approach over the others. Okay, so with that, I just wanted to, you know, share like a 30-second thought just in advance of Shavuos. I think this parak, you know, if we're reading it correctly, which I hope we are, which is about the idea of, you know, renewed commitment to the Torah, and that's the way that Shlomo's bracha to the people really went, you know, in a very meaningful way. So we see that, you know, Kabbalah Satorah isn't just like a historical phenomenon, but it's an ongoing phenomenon, for my money. And I think that, you know, there's a really strong argument to be made that that's what the mitzvah of Hakel is all about, right? Yom HaKahal, Hakel, Hakel HaSam. You know, the Ramban is skeptical. Like, why are you bringing the Taf, the youngest children? They don't understand anything. But, you know, the whole people participated in Matan Torah, and I think that's the idea. It's you sort of recommit yourself to that. It's interesting. The Rambam says that if the, you know, Motzei Yantif Rishon fell out on Shabbos, so you can't have Hakel because you can't blow, you know, the Chatzotzros, which take the place of the Shofaros and the Beis HaMikdash. Like, you know, the Ravid is very upset about this. He says, you know, that's not what it says in the Yerushalmi, and it's true, it's not what it says, but it's almost like the Rambam was arguing that the choreography of Matan Torah itself was essential, that, you know, it was Ma'akev. So I would then just, you know, point out the comment, it's like a passing comment of the Aruch HaShulchan that I think is really resonant. And it says, you know, it's mysterious, it's like the Torah is embarrassed that the 6th of Sivan was the date that the Torah was given. It's like, you know, you have no shortage of occasions when the Torah identifies the 15th of Nisan as the day of the Exodus. Like, you know, why is it that we, you know, we're left to do the math on our own? You know, okay, so we can do the math on our own if you count, you know, 7 weeks and to the 50th day. So you'll come out, you know, basically on the 6th of Sivan, to one view on the 7th of Sivan. But like, why is the Torah like trying to obscure this fact? It's weird. Just say that, you know, we're celebrating this holiday because it's Man Matan Torah Seinu. So he says, you know, what he thinks is the idea is that, okay, that was the first time the Torah was given. But really, like Chazal say, Asher Nochim Mitzavcha Hayom Alu Vavecha, B'chol Yom Yualechem Kechadashim, that Kabbalah Satorah is a daily experience. So they don't want to make it about one day in the year. Say, like, oh, Vav Sivan, today we celebrate getting the Torah. We'll come see you again next year. No, it's meant to be like this ongoing experience. And I think that's the opportunity that we have this week, you know, is really to experience that more intensively. The Jewish people, certainly in the days of Shlomo, had a renewed Kabbalah Satorah. But it's for us, you know, every year. And there's something very, very meaningful, I think, about that, because the world changes, challenges of the world change. And on the one hand, halacha obviously remains ahistorical and immutable, right, these transcendent principles. But also it has to be constantly applied to a new reality and with its own challenges, and that's part of, you know, what makes it such a, I think, an energizing phenomenon, and one that, you know, inspires us all every single year with a sense of, you know, our own personal goals of trying to master what we can, but also, you know, in the national sense, it really is a day of Kahal Gadol. Our national mission. I think the people felt that very intensively in this moment of inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash. Hopefully it's something that we'll, you know, be able to sense, you know, moving forward as we begin Rosh Chodesh Sivan tonight, Kish Echad B'Lev Echad, and over the course of next week. So I want to thank everybody for joining me for this series within a series, a little six-part series on the construction of the Beis HaMikdash after Shavuos, as I already indicated to Ellie, you know, so we have a lot to look forward to, even if it is somewhat, you know, a downhill slope in terms of the back end of Shlomo's career as it's presented in the Navi, you know, until, you know, the wheels will come off entirely. So wishing everybody, you know, wonderful rest of the week and a good Yontif, and looking forward to continuing to learn. Not next week, because next week we'll coming at it right out of Yontif, so we'll literally miss this year time by an hour or so, but then we'll pick it up the following week.
Is this the new time? I just happened to be reading email and I said, oh my goodness. Then,
yeah, so I think it's going to be, I mean, it says 7:30. This week is just, you know, it's Minchas at 8:10.